This is an interview with Mrs. Gladys Wright, who was, before her marriage, Miss Gladys Pollard. Mrs. Wright was the telephone operator in Athabasca starting in the year 1917. Now, Gladys, will you go over quickly your parents' history as to how they, where they were born, when they came to Canada, and particularly when they came to Athabasca, why they came to Athabasca?
My mother was born in London. My father was born in Antwerp and came to Canada in 1909 to Saskatchewan. And stayed 1 year, went to Yakima, Washington, stayed 3 years, came to Athabasca because of friends to homestead, and came to Athabasca and lived in a tent for the summer. Went to Joe Chabot's farm for the winter, and built a green log shack on the homestead, and came to town to work in the sawmill. There was nothing but the shack and rabbits to eat. And I came to town and stayed with friends and went from here to there.
Let me interrupt. Your friend, one of the friends you stayed with was Mrs. Bessie. Was Bessie Biltmeyer,
yeah,
who eventually,
yeah,
is,
oh, yes,
became Mrs.
Yeah.
Bessie Richards.
Bessie's mother and father, Mrs. Biltmeyer, who started a cafe, and I lived with them steady. They moved from a cafe to the Athabasca Hotel, then to the Grand Union Hotel. And from there, I was asked to be night operator at the telephone office. And from there, they wanted to make a semi-continuous service with an agent. And Mr. Hansen wanted to go to the farm. Louise wanted to go to BC. And there was me left, and I was agent in the new building built in the front of the lot.
Can I interrupt you again? This Mr. Hansen you talk about, was his name Martin by any chance?
Yes. I didn't
know.
That's
right.
Do you know him?
Oh, yes. Well, he's dead now.
I thought so.
But I knew him as a farmer. Only.
Yes.
I didn't realize that he had been...
He wanted to farm. He wanted
to... a telephone operator.
He wanted a peg and a cow.
All right. Now, you said that that the other operator was Louise Juno.
Louise Juno.
Can you tell me how to spell Juno in case I come across her name?
French, J-U-N-E-A-U, Juno. And her sister was there before her, and Alva Lewis was there before her or with them because they had continuous service that had to be three operators and an agent. Well, agent was one operator and two spares. And they did away with that, and then I was alone, semi-continuous, and stayed until December 1924.
Now, you told me that when your parents moved into the town to work in the sawmill, you lived in a tent on the riverbank.
When you first came, we had to buy canvas by the yard to make a roof.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And there were other people living in tents,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, one on each side of us. They came from the States to homestead.
Now, let us go, because we are kind of limited to time. Let's go to that flu epidemic, because that was one of the big events in Athabasca during those years, and you would be on the switchboard,
yeah,
at that time.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine you knew a lot more about it than you wanted.
Yeah, really. And heard every day of people Some people went every day and so close. Do you remember Nightingale's, the minister?
I remember that name.
Her two sisters came and they died within 2 days. You know, they got the flu one day and died the next day. They're very hard on the heart.
It was that fast, eh?
Yes, Mrs. Nightingale's two sisters. And
Charlie Nanskable.
Mr. Nanskable. And LaBranche, Rosie LaBranche's husband, she was just married. And a lot of people around the district. You can't really name them all, but it was every day. And McKinley, Sterling McKinley.
Sterling died in that flu.
Yes.
Sterling was one of the children.
The middle one, McKinley, Mrs. McKinley's. Helen and...
Mrs. McKinley was a widow at that time, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, no, there was no hospital in the area at that time.
Yes, there was Miss Thornley and Miss Steed.
Did they have a regular hospital, or did they?
Yes, that hospital by your house.
Oh, is that right? The one where the health unit is now.
Yeah.
And Dr. Meyer for a doctor.
Yes, Dr. Meyer.
I remember hearing of them using rooms over my father's old store for an emergency hospital.
Oh, yes.
I imagine that there were, that the hospital was absolutely packed.
It wasn't flu time.
Well, that was not in the flu time.
I don't think so, because if it was, I wouldn't remember that, but I know there was some baby born up there. You know. That's right, too.
No, we were talking, and... this was quite significant about the wooden sidewalks. You said that you could tell who was coming down the street.
Everybody's footsteps coming up and down the street, I knew which one it was. The sidewalk was high, you see, and it resounded.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you see this newspaper where they have a headline telling you that there were 2,000 people in Athabasca. Was that true?
I couldn't tell you that because I wasn't interested in that. I don't think anybody else was around, but that same amount of subscribers is there, you know, 52 subscribers and 4 rural lines was all there was.
Now, of course, you were there during the very exciting period in the First War.
Yes, it was.
And when someone was killed overseas, would they go through you or would they go through the telegraph?
No, I didn't notice anything about that. But one Sunday morning, one of the Whiteley girls was shot at Minook. She was out hunting with her boyfriend. And I can't tell you her name, one of the Rayner sisters.
Oh, yes.
And just at Minook, and it was on a Sunday, and didn't he shoot her and kill her? And that was on a Sunday morning when the office was closed, and I had to phone all around and phone Edmonton and phone Rayner and so on, you know. It was tragic.
Did you have to live in the telephone office?
Yes, that was the idea. Rent, light and heat.
Mm-hmm.
Part wages.
Do you remember what you got paid?
$65 a month.
That was pretty good wages, wasn't it? For that
rent, light and heat. And then I would get a letter, I don't know how long between, you are now increased $10 to $75 mm-hmm. a month. And then I have another contract later on. You're now increased to $85 a month. And that was the total when I left, $85 a month. Rent, light, and heat.
What year did you leave?
24.
What was the communication December. Between Athabasca and Edmonton at that time? Did a lot of people make use of the train and go back and forth?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, when you were there, because I remember this, did everybody in town, or a lot of people in town, go down to meet the train every night?
Oh, yes. The funny part was the train was always late, and they would, Postmaster Minns would say, "Where's the train?" Somebody else would call up, "Where's the train?" I'd follow that train up from Clyde. Every station. Did the train pass by? Yes, train passed by. And then across the street in Mr. Min's, where's the train? They're waiting to get the mail. And then the others are waiting to get the freight. It would be 2 or 3 hours late.
Where were the where were the other telephone offices? Do you remember that?
No.
I mean, between... No, I'm talking about where could you phone?
Oh, yes.
Like, Twatna, was that...
Yes, Perivale, Manuk, Twatna, Rochester, Vimy, Clyde.
Mm-hmm. And you'd follow the train all the way up there?
Yes, sure. It lost time all the time.
You were telling about when you arrived and they dumped you off the train on the other side of the bridge. And
yes.
You couldn't see any town. You didn't.
No, that was a kind of scared.
Yeah, you
kind should, of scared. It scared me. And I don't know what my parents thought. Yeah. That when you get dumped off and it's all bush and green and not the town in sight. And the trays, what do you call them? Drays, what I wanted to say. The dray would be there to pick up. They knew they were going to get freight. And a few people in the passenger. Because as I said, they were dropping, they had the whole long train of sand cars. Sand for the track, you know. And they dropped that all along the way. It was a work train, I guess that's what I should have done.
Would they,
When we came in 12.
Oh, they owned 12.
And we were lucky to get that train, sort of. You see, they just had work trains on.
Oh, there was no schedules?
No, it was work trains, and they had one coach. And that took all day, because they worked on the road, parked on the way, slow. And then would be the cook trains, the work men, you know, they have boxcars along, and they have a cook there, and all the help for making tracks. And we had a picnic on that train because there were some young fellows there that were going to go further. For Mickey Ryan, does anybody remember Mickey
yes.
Ryan?
Oh, yes.
Mickey very well.
Yeah.
Very well. He was
both knew Mickey Ryan.
Yeah. Sure.
I didn't know him well, but my parents knew him very well.
Well, he was on that train and a brother, I think. Anyway, there was two comics on there, so we had a good time, and it was all day. And then when the train would stop, and then they'd run over to these cabooses, the cook cars, and they get some grub and bring it in. Yeah. That's all I want.
Well, they were working on that train, were they?
Yes, they were dropping sand all along the track. That's what it sounded like. That was what they said. Now it sounds funny, but that was to build up the fill up the bed, I guess. And Ryans were going north, you know, to somewhere around the where the rapids are. And they were going, what did they make there? They did something, transport, Mickey Ryan Transport.
They built a road between Fort Fitzgerald and Fort Smith. And the boats couldn't run the rapids.
No, I know that part. And that's why
Ryan's owned that road.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty good, too. I was over it.
Oh.
They owned it completely. And they would unload one boat and truck the stuff over from, they would unload Fort Fitzgerald and truck over to Fort Smith.
Did the scows come out of the water too? They couldn't go over the rapids. Where did Harold go?
No, I can't give you an answer about that, but the scows certainly couldn't go over the rapids.
The freight was all unloaded from those scows and taken over Portage, and then they were loaded again when they passed the rapids.
That is what Ryan did, and he was doing that. He was doing that in 1930, which was the first time that I ever met him. I met him later on in Edmonton, but you know, when I was talking to you before, I didn't mention boats at all. And yet the boats must have been running, and you must have remembered them.
Well, not the boat wouldn't go, you know, they wouldn't, they go as far as the rapids. They wouldn't, they never got over the rapids.
No, but do you remember them leaving Athabasca and going north?
Oh, sure.
And leaving Athabasca and going up to Mirror Landing?
Yeah, sure, they go up and down, but then we were too young to even bother to ask, and where they went over the rapids, nothing went over.
Well, the boats ran right up in, say, until
1617,
when you were living in the town. For instance, you remember a boat of that caliber?
They're all the same.
Yeah, they were all
the same. They were all the same, but they had a different name. And as Harold was saying, the Northland Echo seems to be mostly in my mind. And you know, the Northern Transportation Company, and you remember Saul, Mr. Saul?
Yeah.
He was, what do you call him, president?
Saul went from the Imperial Bank to the Northern Transportation Company, and I think he had worked for them all his life.
Mm-hmm.
But who owned the Northern Transportation Company?
That I don't know.
Was that a man named Coyne by any chance?
I don't think so. No. Coyne came later, and they were going to do wonders, and they didn't. They didn't.
Yes, they went bankrupt eventually.
Yeah, they were going to. They're flourishing too much spending, weren't they?
Well, I don't remember them, but I know. Well,
I guess you wouldn't, because you remember Tilly, station agent.
Very, very vaguely.
Yeah, they were both a good sport. And Coyne's were here at that time, and well, I would kind of say showing off big businessmen, but I never knew that either. They had some office staff, you know what I mean? They were running something down there by the river, and I couldn't tell you what it was. Had an office and other fellows working for them.
Well, they imported a man named Harry Bayless.
He
eventually became postmaster in Athabasca, but he came to Canada originally to work for Coyne.
Yes, that's what I mean. Big show off, big deal, and didn't turn on. I was trying to think of Bayless, and you got it.
I was going to ask you about.
And it just seems like yesterday, you know, but can't imagine.
Incidentally, his daughter lives probably 3 or 4 blocks away from you. Her name is Hart, H-A-R-T, Dawn Hart, and his wife lives there too.
Who?
Mrs. Bayless.
Who?
Mrs. Bayless lives about 2 blocks from your place in the city.
No?
His daughter's name is Hart, H-A-R-T.
I know Jim Hart.
This is Dawn Hart.
Dawn Hart. No.
There were a couple of other people I was going to ask you about. Both of them, I think, a little bit shady. One of them was a Mr. Greer, who cut a big figure.
Yeah, but you're not thinking of the real estate man.
Mm-hmm.
Shady? I wouldn't know. With that age, I didn't think wrong of anybody.
No. Well, about the time that the real estate boom collapsed, Mr. Greer, I think, was right in the middle of it. And he suddenly disappeared one night and never came back.
Is that right?
And I remember riding in his car once. It was a Model A Ford. And, of course, I thought he was quite an important man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, afterwards, his wife became my first teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I have mixed feelings about Mr. Greer. And the other person I wanted to ask you about was a gentleman who was also in real estate named Captain Barber. Do you remember him?
I do. I really do.
Could you tell us anything about
him? Not too intimately, like, you know, he was an older man. Somebody was asking somebody wrote a letter to Harold asking the origin of Captain Barber. And I took that to Edmonton and showed it to Violet Mills. Her dad was a captain. And she said that those girls, now how would we know? Harold and I were kids playing and, you know, 14 and so on, kids playing, and that was when Barbara was around. Now what would I know about his family? But Violet said that those girls of his were older than her, and she didn't know very much about them. Well, that he was going up and down river too.
I think, yeah, but not as a pilot. He was mostly interested in real estate. And I didn't know he had a family, did he? He had two girls. Did he? Did he have a wife? Or?
Well, I'm too young to was too young to be knowing anybody's business, you know.
Captain Barber had the first car in Athabasca,
I think.
He had the first car in Athabasca.
Is that right? It seems to me that I saw the first car, and I don't know who had it. And you know, the Grand Union, as they turned around there, it turned too short and tipped over a Ford, you know, without a top. And it was a pretty short turn there. And there was, I can't tell you who that would be, because. And then Jack Gordon, well, that's kind of present day stuff, eh? And Jack Gordon. Started mending cars, but and Bob Ilsmeyer, he got a car too, and we used to have to push it uphill and so on. They had no tops, you know, for the wind. And then when there's lots of hills, of course, as you know, and then when we'd be going downhill, they'd say, "Coast, Daddy, coast, say gas, coast up the hill." Nuts, you know, but it's funny at times.
Yeah.
Clark.
A lawyer.
Lawyer Clark.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a long time ago too, wasn't it? I was still there. And the girls. And
yeah.
One boy. Must have been
two
your
boys.
Age.
Two boys. Yes, I grew up with those two boys.
Mm-hmm.
And you never did tell me about those roads out to your farm. Remember you were going when we got cramped for time?
To the farm?
Yeah. But, well, you know, what were the roads? For instance, how long would it take you to come into Athabasca from your farm?
You see, we didn't have anything to travel with. We didn't have anything. My dad didn't have any. Just built a shack and thinking about improving a homestead, which he never did. Had to come into town and work for $2 a day in a sawmill, and you have to eat. And we had nothing, but then we had a neighbor that had oxen, and you know how long that takes yourself. And they had the, they'd go back to Athabasca, I don't know what for, on a flat, what do you call them? Flat hay rack, like thing. And wear lots of clothes, and a blanket, and heat a big stone like that, you know. And those oxen, 3 miles an hour. And then we'd get off and walk and warm the feet, get back on again, you know. So it'd take a long, long time. As a trail, they were trails, because nobody'd done anything but just make a trail. One-way trail to Edmonton. By the way, Mr. Crackle and Mr. Hay, Davy Hay, freighted from Edmonton. And that was before we ever came. And that trail, it was still a trail, and Mrs. Alec McLeod and I went down on train to bring a car back. She was driving a car back. And that was a great big experience.
Oh, she drove the car back.
She drove it back on that trail.
Oh, how long did it take?
I can't remember that, but it was no like now, you know. And it's down a valley.
Yeah.
Not up at the top of a hill.
It was all done in a day, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say Mrs. Alec McLeod drove that car back?
Yes.
And do you remember at that time having to ford a creek? To drive through a creek?
No, I don't think so. Not on that trail. Mm-hmm. What would happen lots of times when people went to the smog from the muskegs burning at night, mm-hmm. that smoke and that dampness. And you would have to, I don't know why people drive around anyway, but you would have to walk on the road in front of the car so they could follow you. That smoke, you know, was so thick. I know it was a trail, but at least you had to have somebody go in front of you. And you could only do 40 miles an hour anyway, I think the Fords could only do that. But I don't know, but they would be traveling at night sometimes and maybe get caught late or so, I don't know. There were a lot of smoke, you know, a lot of muskegs in those days. And like now, that's kind of a whiteout, isn't it? When you can't see, it's not too bad, but you can't see beyond the houses very much. It's, I don't know if that's fog or snow.
Could I change the subject? Have you had, could you give us some kind of an estimate of how many people died during that flu epidemic?
I don't see how I could. And there must have been a paper around at that time, a journal, an Athabasca journal. And
probably.
I don't know if anybody kept track. I would think they're too busy to keep track, you know. Dr. Meyer was a good soul, I think, and he was the busiest man. He went to everybody who called. Way out that way, and somebody called way out east, and every time he left town, he'd tell me, I'm going this place or that place, so I'd know. And he went to all those people who had the flu, they'd call, you see, and he wouldn't know it was the flu till he got there, and he'd open all the windows, and he couldn't stay with them. And they had to do the best they could, because sometimes they were all in bed, without one of them to wait on the other. And I don't know where all of you were, but it was practically suicide to get up, to stand up out of bed and to get a chill or to go to the door or something like that, because that's what that Sterling McKinley did. Lots of people don't think and they don't believe they have the flu. And Sterling got out of bed and went to the door, to the back door, and next day he was dead. And it was, those girls were Nightingale's, Mrs. Nightingale's sisters, you know, they were so nice, so young, and so nice looking, such nice girls, and they were only visiting her, they didn't live here. And to think that went to the hospital one day and gone the next. And that's really drastic. We were all wearing flu masks. Where were you? You were a baby. Uh-huh. 18. We're all wearing flu masks. And taking each other's picture. I hear that the Chinese are wearing flu masks as soon as anybody gets a cold. And I see them on TV, walking around with these little things on, you know, in China now. So they don't kill each other. They've got too many now.
Yeah.
And it is.
Well, of course, one reason the flu was so bad was because they didn't know how to treat it.
And it was a surprise to everyone.
As you say, cold was very hard on flu, and the doctor would go out and open all the windows. My father had the flu at that time very, very badly.
He would say cold baths. How would you know that now? He didn't... not at that time. I know
I'm just going by what my mother told me.
Oh, yeah. Fresh air was his idea. At home, too, his house.
Right.
Not home. But Bill, before we were married, he'd be the driver when Meyer had to go way, way out to Plum London. And in the winter, we'd have to have he had the car. Bill would go with the car. And had to go to a maternity case. That's a long way from London. And the snow would be as high as the fences. And they'd cut the fence and go through it. And then they'd go on and cut the fence to get out of it. And so on. When they got to the lady was born. Honestly, he might as well have stayed home. And the things that poor man. And then out west, I can't think of their name now, but they were not thrashing, but they were cutting wood. Small wood. Remember small wood?
Mm-hmm.
And he got poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the story?
Yeah.
Mrs. The place where they were working, the mother and the two boys, now they were out there, and you'll have to think of their name, had a stack of dishes in the cupboard and the little fruit dishes, and she, the silly woman, as a grown woman, had put a little paper package of strychnine in the cupboard instead of away far, because they could use that for the animals out,
yeah.
Wild animals, and they had supper and they used the fruit dishes for fruit, and he was the one that got the top dish, the small man, and that was strychnine. And the man, they convulsed terribly. I heard the story after they called Meyer out and all that, but he can't do anything. And he meant his wife, I forget her name now, the shock, she lost her voice. You know her, I think. She died just lately. She lost her voice forever. Isn't that a strange thing?
She didn't lose it, but it became very husky.
Yeah, she didn't. She just kind of had to whisper. They had five little children, and I guess it's an awful shock to her. And what an awful thing to be so careless, eh? What were those people's names anyway? Bill was out there thrashing the tube with Mr. Keir. And on the phone.
Do you remember the funerals at that time?
How?
How they were conducted? Did they have a hearse and?
I don't know. Whatever Mr. Nanskable had, I really don't remember.
Well, Mr. Nanskable died in.
There was a flu.
1918.
Yeah. She was left with children too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was right before before Archie Hollings had who used to service her or maintain the telephone office. Before Archie Hollings had, who used to look after the maintenance?
Mostly Con Cornelius. Con Monpetit.
Con
Monpetit.
Oh, I see.
Can you remember him?
No, he'd be before my time, but
that's before Archie. But Pettiford was the telegraph man. He lived here. Yeah. No, there was nobody. They had to come from Edmonton each time.
Oh, so somebody would come out each time.
Each time from Edmonton.
If there was trouble.
Monty, he was rascal, you know. I think he's at Drumheller now.
Oh.
I heard one time. But he was a rascal. He was fired for padding the expenses.
Oh, I see.
He says the government is going to pay for my girl's presents. He was a rascal because Mr. Pettiford left his blowtorch in the office, and he packed it in his kit and took it away. And I couldn't pay any attention to that because I thought, you know, it's not my business. Then. A girl, May, that was staying with me and go to school. May Chancellor was staying with me and going to school. And the camera had a leak in it, and there was nothing here to, everything had to go to Edmonton. So
Con says he would take it and get it repaired for her. She never saw it again. That was kind of dirty, you know, to do that on the kid. And then he got fired. He was a comic, too.
He was a comic, wasn't
he? He was a comic, too.
Oh, what sort of jokes did he... did he practical jokes?
Well, he, being French, I didn't like his jokes. That's true. Then when Archie came, it was always Archie because he was from Westlock and it was closer, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And he was very quiet, very quiet. Mm-hmm. He always come to the office after work to sit and talk because there was nothing to do but go to bed. Eh? And after that, when he get to the hotel, he would write this poetry.
Yeah.
I guess he just couldn't stop himself. There was such a nice long one about the Aurora Borealis, and the words just sort of fell off each other, you know, glinting, scintillating, glorious Aurora Borealis, just streams and streams of words, and lots of, about, you know, 9 or 10 stanzas, and he always made a double line. You know, I don't know what you call it, but a double line and the next double line rhymed. Not just everyone rhymed at the ends, or every two, but to every...
A-B-A-B.
Yeah. And he got... that was that.
Yeah, was the exchange, you were out of service for any length of time?
It's just mostly that 116... You know, the toll line.
The toll line to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And,
I guess it was just a single wire. I guess it broke without...
mind you, after, you know, the freezing and the... 29. No, I wasn't there in 29. Everything here, all the 29, they had a big guess. That was the depression year, wasn't it, eh?
That is the stock market crash.
Right, that big storm that happened. And the ice on the leaves on the trees and broke all the branches down and everything. Of course, we see that in town, too. But that would happen, too. That would be that freezing and breaking branches on the line. I think the hardest line would be going to Calling Lake, eh?
Well, Calling Lake, that would be the toughest.
Yeah, that would be a hard one to follow.
Yeah.
Harold said that he would do it on foot, but he wouldn't do it, couldn't do it all on foot. He'd get a team, and then he'd have to get off the road and follow the line, maybe in the bush, something like that. See, by the way, when I was coming up, I saw every pole was new. I don't know, what is that on the highway? All the poles were fresh poles.
That's power, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah.
I think all the telephone lines around here are buried.
Yeah, well, is that all a new construction, that all those poles?
Well, it's replacement construction.
They were, weren't they?
Yeah.
I thought to myself, they look so new. I'm going to ask somebody. I guess it's power. You get Calgary power?
Mm-hmm. So you left the telephone office in 24. You got married here. 23. You got married here, and then did you leave Athabasca?
Yeah. Bill went back to Edmonton. He worked for McLeod. Told you. Alec McLeod.
Uh-huh.
In the garage.
Uh-huh.
And then when we got married, he brought up a lathe from Edmonton and went into that shop where Aykroyd had the photo studio I was telling you about, where he abandoned it and all the pictures were all over the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we sorted out what we wanted. And Bill had a machine shop in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to Edmonton. His dad, across from the store, his dad's store on White Avenue, they put up the long garage and he started there. And I forget how long he went ahead. And then I left in, but we were there a year, I think, 23? April 23, 24? Yeah, over a year. And Bill would be in his shop there, and I'd be in that shop there.
And you stayed there all your life? You lived in Edmonton from that time on?
Same spot. And some Safeway wanted to get in that place where they're there now, where Bill was. And that's kind of another story, because those real estate men are crooks. That's what Grandma used to say, he's a crook.
He's a crook.
And poor Bill had come out of the hospital 9 days after having a perforated ulcer. And this man called Love came to the house, and they wanted one lot. And they wanted one lot from Bill. And then they wiggled it around like that. He's in no shape, you know, to do any business that in the wintertime. That wasn't very good. So he Bill didn't consult the neighbors, the fellow next door, the lot or anything across the street. And, you know, what would you do if you came 9 days out of a hospital? You know,
yeah.
Wouldn't be fit for anything.
Yeah.
So anyway, he sold his place much too cheap, and then he had to move all that scrap, 2 yards full of scrap, in the winter.
Did you
loads of it came to Harold's.
Did you see any of those particular pictures that you would like a copy of that we could send you?
Yours?
Uh-huh.
No. Because I think that, as they say, after me, nobody wants my pictures either.